breath, feeling her worries reassert themselves. Thankfully, Jill didn't notice, her mind clearly elsewhere. "Hold up a second," she said. Maria watched as Jill reached into her handbag. Pulling out her lipstick, she applied some before dropping it back into her bag. "Okay," Jill said. "Now we can go." Maria stared at her. "Really?" Jill winked. "What can I say? First impressions matter." Up ahead, Maria watched as two paralegals suddenly rounded the corner from the lobby, whispering excitedly to each other like a couple of high schoolers. Jill nodded toward them. "Now do you understand what I mean? You were definitely holding out on me. That is one gorgeous man."
"He's not that good looking."
Yeah, he is. Now come on, you've got a date and you shouldn't be late."
As soon as Maria spotted Colin in the lobby, her stomach did a little flip-flop. He was facing the opposite direction, waiting for her, she realized. And from the back, he could have passed for a young lawyer, albeit an exceptionally fit one with visible tattoos. When Maria glanced toward the receptionist, she noted that Gwen was trying hard not to stare at Colin while she worked the phone. Colin must have sensed their presence, and when he turned, Maria caught sight of a lovely assortment of flowers, oranges and yellows, with a burst of red in the center. Her mouth dropped open slightly.
"Surprise," Jill whispered,
but Maria was too shocked to hear it.
"Oh," she finally said. "Hi."
Beginning to approach, she was only vaguely aware that Jill had remained behind. Up close, his clean scent mingled with that of the flowers.
"New clothes?"
"Freedom clothes," he answered. "They probably kept me out of prison." She smiled, amused. And in the next instant, she thought,
"And I can't believe his answer doesn't worry me."
But she didn't want to think about that. Instead, she nodded at the flowers.
"For me?"
"Yes," he said, handing them over. "It's an autumn bouquet."
"They're beautiful. Thank you."
"You're welcome.
Let me put them in my office. I'll be right back and then we can go."
"Okay." Behind her, she heard Jill clear her throat and she turned.
"Oh, this is my friend Jill. She's an attorney here too."
Jill approached and he offered his hand. "Hi, Jill."
"Hi, Colin."
She took his hand, her demeanor friendly yet professional.
"It's a pleasure to meet you."
Leaving them to chat, Maria hurried back to her office, noticing the two paralegals who eyed her with a touch of envy as she passed them. She tried to remember the last time someone had bought her flowers. Aside from a single rose that Luis had given her on Valentine's Day after they'd been dating for a year, she couldn't remember a single instance. Setting the vase in a prominent place in her office, she returned to the lobby just in time to catch the tail end of Jill and Colin's conversation. Jill turned.
"I hear you're a much better photographer than you let on. Colin says you took an amazing shot of some porpoises."
"He's being overly kind," Maria said. "I get lucky every now and then. I'd still like to see it."
"I'll email it," she said.
Then to Colin.
"Are you ready?"
Colin nodded, and after saying goodbye to Jill, they headed down to the parking lot.
"Your friend is nice," Colin remarked.
"She's great," Maria agreed. "If it wasn't for her, I would have eaten alone at my desk since I've been here."
"Until today," Colin said with a smile. "How are things at work?"
"I'm buried," she admitted. "But I'm hoping things will slow down. My boss is going to be out of the office this afternoon and tomorrow."
"If that's the case, I wouldn't recommend throwing a massive party and trashing the office in his absence. I've learned that it tends to irritate people."
"I'll keep that in mind," she said as he opened the car door for her.
She slid into the Camaro. Once Colin was behind the wheel, he leaned toward her, keys in hand.
"I was thinking we could head over to one of the restaurants downtown. We'd probably be able to get a table outside with a great view."
"Oh, yeah," she thought. "About that." Maria fiddled with the seatbelt, wondering how best to explain it.
"It sounds wonderful," she ventured. "And ordinarily, I'd love to go, but the thing is, I was over at my parents' house last night when you called, and I happened to mention that we were going to lunch, and..."
She exhaled, deciding simply to come out with it.
"They're expecting us to have lunch at the restaurant."
Colin tapped his car key on the seat. "You want me to meet your parents?"
"Not really, not yet anyway, but..."
She wrinkled her nose, unsure of how he would react, hoping he wouldn't be angry.
"Kind of.
He slipped the keys into the ignition.
Okay, he said.
Really? It doesn't bother you even though we just met?
No.
Just so you know, it would bother a lot of guys.
Okay.
Well, good, she said.
He said nothing right away. Finally, you're nervous.
They don't know you like I do,
she inhaled slowly, thinking, now for the hard part.
When you meet them, you have to understand that they're old-fashioned. My dad has always been protective and my mom worries, and I'm afraid that if they start asking questions...
When she trailed off, Colin finished for her. You're worried what I'll say to them and how they'll react. Though she didn't answer, she suspected that he already knew what she was thinking. I won't lie to them, he said.
I know, she said.
That's the problem.
And I won't ask you to lie. I don't want you to lie, but it still makes me nervous.
Because of my past, he said.
I wish I wouldn't have to say anything to you, and I'm sorry. Logically, I know that I'm an adult and I should be able to date whomever I want, and it shouldn't matter what they think. But it does, because I still want their approval. And believe me, I know how awful that sounds.
It doesn't sound awful. It sounds normal.
You don't need approval.
Evan would probably say that I'm not normal. Despite the tension, she laughed before getting quiet again.
Are you mad at me?
No, he answered.
But you're probably offended.
No, he said again.
What are you feeling then?
He didn't answer right away. I feel flattered, he finally offered. She blinked.
Flattered? How on earth could you feel flattered?
It's complicated.
I'd still like to hear it.
He shrugged. Because you told me how you were feeling, even though you suspected it might hurt my feelings. And you told the truth. And you did both those things from a place of vulnerability and concern. Because you want them to like me. Because you care about me. That's flattering. She smiled, half from surprise and half because he was right.
I think I'm going to give up trying to predict anything about you ever again.
Okay, he said. He twisted the key and the engine rumbled to life. Before he slipped it into gear, he turned toward her. So, what do you want to do?
Go to lunch? Hope for the best?
Sounds like a plan. La Cocina de la Familia was located a few blocks off Market Street in an aging strip mall, but the parking spaces in front of the restaurant were full. As they approached the front door, Colin struck her as being calm as ever, which only put Maria more on edge. He reached for her hand. She clasped his in return, like someone clutching a life preserver on a listing ship.
I forgot to ask whether you even like Mexican food.
I remember that I used to like it a lot.
But you don't eat it anymore because it's not healthy, right?
I can always find something to order. She squeezed his hand, liking the way it felt in hers.
My mom said she's going to make us something special, which means you might not get the chance. That said, I did tell her you liked healthy food.
It'll be fine, he said.
Do you ever worry about anything?
I try not to.
Well, when we're done, you're going to start giving me lessons, all right? Because lately, that feels like the only thing I'm doing.
He pulled open the door and she led the way inside. Her Uncle Tito immediately approached, obviously excited she was here, rambling in Spanish. After greeting her with a kiss, he shook Colin's hand and reached for the menus before leading them to a booth in the corner. It was the only open table in the place, which meant that her parents must have been saving it. Once they were seated, her cousin Anna brought glasses of water and a basket of chips and salsa to the table. Maria chatted with her briefly and introduced Colin a second time. When Anna left, Maria leaned across the table.
I'm sorry, she said. I don't come in as much as I should. They're probably as excited as my parents.
How many of your relatives work here?
Right now?
She made a quick scan of the place, spotting another uncle at the bar and a couple of aunts waiting on tables.
I'd guess there's probably six or so, but I'd have to ask my parents to be sure.
He surveyed the restaurant. It's busy in here.
It always is. Over the years, we've had to expand the restaurant 3 times. When it first started, there were only 8 tables.
As she answered, she saw her parents emerge from the kitchen, and she sat up straighter.
Okay, they're coming. My parents, I mean. When her parents reached the table, she kissed her mother, then her father, all the while hoping they wouldn't make a spectacle.
"This is my friend Colin," she said. "These are my parents, Felix and Carmen."
"Hi," Felix and Carmen said, almost in unison, both of them plainly giving him the once-over.
"It's a pleasure to meet you both," he said. "Maria says you're a student," Felix said, jumping right in.
"And that you work as a bartender?"
"Yes," Colin responded. "Serena's actually in a couple of my classes. I work at Krabby Pete's down by the beach." Then, no doubt thinking of Maria's worries, and not wanting to get drawn into a long conversation about his past, he motioned around the restaurant.
"This is an incredible business you've built. How long has it been around?"
31 years, Felix answered, a trace of pride in his voice.
"Maria said you've had to expand over the years. That's impressive."
"We've been blessed," Felix agreed.
"Have you eaten here before?"
"No," Colin admitted. "But Maria says your wife is an amazing chef." Felix stood a little straighter.
"She is the best," he said, glancing over at Carmen. "Of course, because of that, she sometimes believes that she is the boss."
"I am the boss,"
Carmen said in somewhat broken English. Colin smiled, and after more small talk, Maria watched as her dad reached for her mom's arm.
"Let's go. We should let them visit," Felix said.
After saying goodbye, Maria watched her parents start back toward the kitchen.
"You know they're in there talking about you right now, with Tito and Anna and all of the rest of them. Aside from Luis, you're the only guy I've ever brought here."
"I'm honored," he said,
and she had a feeling he actually meant it.
"It wasn't as bad as I thought it would be," she added.
"They're gracious people."
"Yes, but I'm still their daughter, and they didn't ask any hard questions."
"Maybe they won't."
"Oh, they will, eventually. Unless, of course, we never see each other again."
"Is that what you want?" Maria dropped her eyes for a moment.
"No," she said. "I'm glad we're here, and I'm happy we'll be spending some time together this weekend."
"Which means?"
"That the next time we're all together, assuming there will be a next time, I'm going to be even more nervous."
Minutes later, Carmen and two of Maria's cousins began ferrying food to the table. Plates of tacos, burritos, mole poblano, and enchiladas. Tamales, carne asada, chili relleno, tilapia Veracruz, and a bowl of salad. As her mom began placing the dishes on the table, Maria waved her hands.
"Mom, this is way too much,"
Maria protested. Even Colin appeared to be surprised as all the plates began to arrive.
"Eat what you want," Carmen said in Spanish. "We'll bring the rest of it to the back and set it out. People will finish it." "But..."
Carmen glanced at Colin, then back to Maria.
"Your sister was right. He's very handsome."
"Mom!
What? He doesn't understand me."
"That's not the point.
It's just good to see you happy. Your dad and I have been worried. All you ever do is work."
She smiled before her gaze returned to Colin.
"Colin? Is that an Irish name?"
"I have no idea."
"Is he Catholic?"
"I haven't asked him."
"What do you talk about?"
"You have no idea," Maria thought. "And you don't want to know.
It's not polite to talk in front of him like this, you know."
"Of course,"
her mom said, squeezing the last plate between their water glasses.
"You're absolutely right."
Switching to English, she smiled at Colin.
"Please, enjoy," she offered.
"Thank you. We will."
A moment later, they were alone, mountains of food spread before them.
"It smells delicious," Colin said.
"Are you kidding? This is ridiculous. Who on earth could eat this much food?"
"You sound upset."
"Of course I'm upset. We should have been able to order off the menu, but instead my mom had to do her thing."
"What's her thing?"
"I'm still trying to figure it out. To impress you, to make you feel welcome."
"Those are good things."
"I know, but she tends to overdo it."
She watched as Colin's gaze moved from one plate to the next, and she pointed at the tilapia.
"I think my mom made this one special for you. It's just baked fish with tomatoes, olives, and raisins. Go ahead and serve up."
He took a couple of fillets and added some salad to his plate. She also took one of the fillets and salad, but added half an enchilada. The rest remained untouched. When Colin tasted the fish, he tapped his fork against his plate.
"This is unbelievable," he said. No wonder she's the boss.
She is good.
Can you cook like this?
She shook her head. I wish. I'm not nearly as good as my mom, but I started in the kitchen and I learned the basics on how to make everything. I enjoyed it too, but after a while my parents thought it would be better if I learned to wait tables. They thought that being forced to talk to strangers would help me overcome my shyness.
Again, with the shy?
Obviously, in your estimation, it worked. And if you're curious, I'm an excellent waitress.
He laughed, and for the next hour they bounced from one subject to another. Their favorite movies and the places they one day wanted to visit. He told her a bit more about his family, and she did the same. Whenever she spoke, he listened with quiet concentration, his eyes never leaving hers. The conversation was easy and unforced, but through it all, she couldn't help feeling that he actually cared about everything she was saying. Despite her family's presence and the conversations drifting from other tables, their lunch together felt strangely intimate. By the time her parents dropped by their table a second time, and despite her mother's disappointment at how little either of them had eaten, Maria felt strangely relaxed and content. After a series of warm goodbyes, they drove back to the office, the old Camaro playing along perfectly. There, Colin walked her to the entryway, and when he slipped his hand into hers a second time, all she could think was how utterly natural it felt. At the entrance, she felt him tug gently, willing her to stop.
"What time on Saturday?" she asked, turning to him.
"I have a training session at 4 that ends at 6, so how about I pick you up at your place around 7:30? We'll have dinner first and then head out."
"Sounds great," she said. "What kind of training session?"
"Striking and groundwork," he said. "Groundwork is like wrestling."
"Can anyone watch?"
"I guess so," he said. "I'm sure the gym owner wouldn't mind, but I'd have to ask."
"Would you?"
"Why? Do you want to come?"
"Since we're going dancing, I might as well watch you doing something you enjoy too."
He didn't hide his surprise.
"Okay," he said. "But I'll have to head home to clean up before we go out, so is it okay if you meet me at the gym?"
When she nodded, he gave her the name of the gym and she jotted her home address on the back of her business card. He slipped her card into his pocket, and before she even realized what was happening, he was leaning in, his lips meeting hers. The kiss was gentle, and though it wasn't as electrifying as their kiss of the previous Sunday, there was something warm and reassuring about it. Suddenly, it didn't matter what her parents might think. Here and now, Colin was the only thing that mattered. And when he pulled back, she found herself wishing that it had lasted a little longer. In that instant, however, she saw movement in her peripheral vision, and when she focused on it, she registered that Ken had rounded the corner, no doubt after parking on the other side of the building, and was standing motionless, watching them from a distance. She felt herself stiffen, and Colin followed her gaze.
"Is that him?" he asked, his voice low. "Ken?"
"Yes," she said,
and she watched as his expression suddenly went hard. He didn't separate from her, but his attention zeroed in on Ken. Though he didn't squeeze her hand, she could feel the tension in it, a coiled, deep-seated violence held in check by a thread. She wasn't afraid, but she had the sudden certainty that up close, Ken definitely would be. Ken continued to watch them. It was a standoff of sorts, and still Colin continued to stare, turning to face her again only after Ken turned away. He kissed her again, this time with a trace of possessiveness, before pulling back.
"Don't let him bother you. He's not worth it," she said.
"He's bothering you."
"I'll be fine."
"I still don't like him."
"Is that why you kissed me again?"
"No."
"Then why did you do it?"
"I like you," he answered.
His comment, so direct, so obviously truthful, made her stomach do that ridiculous flip-flop again, and it was all she could do not to grin like a fool.
"What are you doing tonight and Friday?"
"I have plans with Evan and Lily."
"Both nights?"
"Yes."
"What are you doing?"
"I don't want to tell you."
"Why?"
"I don't want to tell you that either."
She squeezed his hand before letting go.
"I know you're telling the truth, but you're not really saying anything. Should I be worried? Are you going out with someone else?"
No, he said, shaking his head. There's nothing to worry about. I had a great time at lunch today. I enjoyed meeting your parents.
She peered up at him.
I'm glad.
He smiled then before finally taking a step backward. It's probably time for you to go back to work.
I know.
Is he still watching us?
She peeked past him and shook her head.
I think he went around to the back entrance.
Will he be bothered by what he saw?
She thought about it.
Probably. But now he knows you actually exist, and that's a good thing. If he bothers me again, I'll just hint that you're the jealous type.
I'm not, he said. His blue-gray eyes were intense yet gentle. But I still don't like him.
Chapter 11. Colin. On Saturday morning, Colin rose early and went for a bike ride, just as the sun was coming up. His bike, a rusting beater that he'd picked up at a pawn shop for almost nothing, was at least a decade old, but it did the job, and he was able to work up a serious sweat before he even reached the gym. There, he spent an hour in a cross-training class slamming heavy ropes, pushing weighted sleds, throwing medicine balls, and doing a variety of other exercises, then staggered back to his bike for the ride home. He mowed the lawn and trimmed the bushes, reflecting that though he'd been preoccupied by thoughts of Maria since they'd first met, those thoughts didn't compare to the almost obsessive way he dwelled on her now. Even Evan had noticed. Earlier, when he'd stepped out onto the porch, he'd been wearing a smirk that let Colin know he was fully aware of the effect that Maria was having on him. Evan himself had been ebullient on both Thursday and Friday nights, and Colin suspected that it might have something to do with the whole salsa dancing is sensual thing, but it wasn't his place to ask. Lily, too, had noticed that Colin had developed feelings for Maria, but remained focused on his dancing lessons. However, she'd recommended a restaurant downtown, reminding him twice to make reservations. She taught him more about dancing than he thought possible, but he still wasn't entirely confident in his abilities. He didn't want to imagine how unprepared he would have been had she not intervened. After completing his chores, Colin sipped on his second protein drink of the day while he straightened up the apartment, then began working on a paper for his classroom management class. It was only 5 pages, but he was too distracted to do much more than put together an outline before he finally called it quits. Changing back into his workout clothes, he grabbed his gym bag and headed out the door. Though it had been performing like a champ recently, today the engine coughed and coughed, finally sputtering reluctantly to life, meaning that the problem was neither the ignition switch nor the alternator. He should have been preoccupied with finding a solution, but instead he found himself conjuring up Maria's image, strangely anxious that their date go smoothly. He called her after work on Thursday and Friday, and they talked for more than an hour each night, which was a new experience for him. He couldn't remember talking to anyone on the phone that long, ever. Until Maria, he couldn't imagine how anyone sustained such a lengthy conversation. But Maria made it easy, and more than once, he found himself smiling at whatever it was she was saying. She mentioned that Ken had been keeping his distance, and when she recounted the blind date she'd been on the night he'd changed her tire, he'd laughed aloud. After he hung up the phone, he'd found it difficult to fall asleep. Ordinarily, he collapsed in bed at the end of the day, unable to keep his eyes open. For the first time in a long while, he considered calling his parents. He wasn't sure why the urge struck him, but he assumed it had something to do with the way Maria talked about her parents and how well they got along. He wondered how different his life might have been had he been brought up in a family like hers. It might not have been any different, of course. He'd been a handful even before he could walk. But if family dynamics played even a small role, then his life had taken a direction that wasn't entirely of his making. And though he was satisfied with his current path, the road had, until recently, been littered with potholes and boulders. That Maria was able to look past those things, considering her own respectable history, was still something of a surprise, though a surprise of the very best kind. Pulling up at the gym, he spotted Maria standing out front. She was dressed in shorts and a t-shirt, and he thought again that she was one of the most beautiful women he'd ever met.
Hey there, she said as he approached. You ready to beat some people up?
It's only practice.
You sure I can go inside to watch?
He reached for the door, nodding.
I talked to the owner this morning and he was fine with it. And unless you decide to go in the cage, he promised he wouldn't even make you sign a waiver.
You're quite the negotiator.
I try, he said. He held the door open, eyeing her figure as she slid past him. He watched as she surveyed her surroundings. Unlike many commercial gyms, this place had more of a warehouse feel. They walked past assorted racks of weights and other cross-training equipment, toward the training room at the far end of the building. Passing through another door, he led the way into a roomy space with padded walls and large mats, equipment piled in every corner. Over to the left was the cage. A few of Colin's training partners were stretching or otherwise warming up, and he nodded toward them as he set down his bag. Maria wrinkled her nose.
It smells back here.
It's only going to get worse, he promised.
Where should I sit?
Colin gestured at a bunch of equipment in the corner. Crates of boxing gloves, assorted pads, various elastics, jump ropes, and plyometric boxes. You can sit over there on the boxes if you'd like, he said. We don't normally use that part of the room.
Where will you be?
All over, most likely, he said.
How many guys will be here?
8 or 9, maybe. Saturdays are always a little slow. During the week, there are 15 or 16 of us.
In other words, only the supremely dedicated are here?
It's more like the workout nuts, or guys who are just starting out and trying to hit every workout they can. On Saturdays, a lot of the serious ones are out of town at events.
That's good. Since we're going out, I mean, I'd hate for you to end up all cut and bruised like you were the first night I saw you.
Are you ever going to let that go?
I don't think I can, she said, standing on tiptoe to kiss him on the cheek. The image is burned into my brain forever.
Colin did a quick warm-up, arm rolls and leg swings, a few minutes of jumping rope. By then, Todd Daly, the main instructor and a retired UFC fighter, and Jared Moore, who was fighting professionally but not quite at UFC level, had arrived, and Daly led the entire group through more warm-ups. While awaiting his turn in the cage, Colin worked on his ground skills, arm bars and leg locks, various submission holds. Most of the skills had their roots in the martial arts and wrestling, with speed, instinct, and balance being far more important than brute strength. As was usual, during Saturday classes, Daly demonstrated the moves first, occasionally using Colin as a partner, before the group split in two. Each group was given a chance to practice the move, repeating it 10 or 12 times before switching positions with their partners. They would then move on to a different set of skills. Within 10 minutes, Colin was breathing hard. By the half-hour mark, his shirt was drenched. Through it all, Daly critiqued them, telling them where to place a foot for additional leverage or how to wrap more effectively with the legs, the subtle variations endless. One by one, people rotated through the cage, and after an hour, it was Colin's turn. He put on headgear and heavier gloves and worked with a partner while Moore, a former Golden Gloves champ from Orlando, shouted coaching tips. Colin went through 7 2-minute rounds, bouncing and circling, taking advantage of openings to strike or kick while trying to avoid leaving any open shots. He dominated, but less because of his own skill than his opponent's lack thereof. The guy he faced was out of shape and relatively new, with only a single fight behind him, which he'd lost. From there, it was back to the mats again, where they worked on takedowns while their partner's back was against the wall. Then, switching positions, they tried to prevent takedowns. By the end of class, Colin's muscles were twitching with exhaustion. Throughout the afternoon, he found his eyes drifting toward Maria. He'd expected her to be bored, but her gaze followed him the entire time, making the session harder than usual. Ordinarily, focusing exclusively on his opponent was easy, but her presence made him self-conscious in a way he'd never experienced. In a match, this lack of focus would land him in trouble. By the end of class, he felt like he'd taken 2 steps back mentally, and he knew he'd have to work hard to regain ground. It was, after all, a sport that was equal parts mental and physical, even if most people didn't realize it. Afterward, he went straight to his bag and tossed in his gear before looping it over his shoulder. By then, Maria had walked up. "What did you think?" he asked, adjusting the strap.
"It looked hard and tiring and sweaty."
That's about it when you get right down to it.
How do you think it went?
Okay, he said. I got distracted.
By me?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Don't be.
He smiled before tugging at his shirt.
Could you give me a few minutes to rinse off and change? I need to get out of these things or my car seat will be soaked by the time I get home.
Maria wrinkled her nose. That's kind of gross to think about.
Is that a yes or a no?
By all means, she said. I'll wait out front for you.
When Colin finally exited the locker room, he spotted Maria just outside the doors, talking on the phone. In her sunglasses, she resembled a glamorous 50s-era movie star. She hung up just as he approached.
That was Serena.
Is she all right?
She's having dinner at the house tonight with the director of some scholarship thing, so she's a bit nervous, but other than that, she's okay.
She shrugged.
Do you feel better?
I feel cleaner. Temporarily, anyway. I'm still sweating.
She touched his arm.
I'm glad I came. It was a lot more interesting than I thought it would be.
Are we still on for 7:30?
I hope so, she said. And just to warn you, when we go dancing, I might be a little rusty.
I wouldn't worry. It'll be my first time, ever. And Maria?
Yes?
Thanks for coming today. It meant a lot to me.
As soon as Colin got out of his car, Evan stepped onto the porch holding a plastic shopping bag.
Here, he said, holding the bag out. This is for you, and you owe me some money.
Colin stopped in front of the porch.
For what? Lily thought you might need something to wear tonight.
I have clothes.
Don't blame me, I said exactly the same thing to her, but she's Lily. And she dragged me through the stores anyway, and like I said, you owe me some money. The receipt is in the bag.
What did she buy?
It's actually not as bad as it could have been. I had visions of her selecting something with tassels or bells or whatever, but she didn't. It's black slacks, a red button-down shirt, and black shoes.
How did she know my size?
Because she bought you clothes last Christmas.
And she remembered?
She's Lily. She remembers things like that. And would you take the bag, please? My arm is getting tired.
Colin reached up to take it.
What's going to happen if I don't wear them?
For starters, you still have to pay me. Then you'll also hurt her feelings, which is the last thing you should do after all the dance lessons. And, of course, you'll have to explain to Lily why you're not wearing them.
How will she know whether I wear them or not?
Because she's here, and she insists that you drop by before you go out. She wants to talk to you.
At a bit of a loss, Colin said nothing.
Just wear the damn clothes, all right?
When Colin didn't respond, Evan squinted slightly.
You owe me.
Colin stood in front of the bathroom mirror, acknowledging that it could have been a lot worse. The shirt was actually more burgundy than red, and though it wasn't something he would have picked out for himself, it wasn't half bad, especially with the sleeves rolled up. He'd been planning all along to wear black slacks, more leftovers from his courtroom days, and the shoes were a lot like the ones he already owned, without the scuffs, which meant he'd probably needed a new pair anyway. How Lily had known was beyond him, but he'd long since given up being surprised by anything she did. In the kitchen, he scribbled out a check to Evan, grabbed his keys, and turned off his lights on the way out the door. Rounding the house, he went up the steps, noting that the door had been left ajar. Pushing it open, he saw Lily and Evan in the kitchen, each holding a glass of wine. Lily set her glass on the counter with a smile.
"Well, aren't you handsome?"
she declared as she approached. She leaned in and kissed him on the cheek.
The color is perfect on you, and I am certain that Maria will find you quite dashing.
Thank you, Colin said.
It was my pleasure, and I'm hopeful that you remember everything we practiced. I assume you went through the steps today?
Not today.
What on earth did you do?
I went to the gym.
Of course you did, she said, not hiding her disappointment. You really need to learn to prioritize. And I simply can't let you go until I know for certain that you retained everything you need to know.
I'm sure I'll be fine, and I'm supposed to pick her up in a few minutes.
Then we'll have to make it quick. Evan, she called out, will you please put on some music?
Sure, he said. Grabbing his phone, he tapped a few buttons as he walked over. I just happened to have a song right here.
Obviously, Lily had been planning this all along. She reached for Colin's hand.
Just run me through a bit of everything, okay? At full speed?
Colin complied before finally separating from Lily.
Good enough?
You're going to dazzle her, Lily winked. Just like you did with the flowers.
And you know what else will dazzle her?
Evan asked. When Colin turned toward him, he knew that Evan's thoughts had taken a serious turn.
First your car starts, and then you don't end up getting arrested.
Colin had barely finished knocking when Maria pulled the door open. For a long moment, all he could do was stare. Her blouse hugged her curves, and her skirt reached only to mid-thigh. Her strappy high heels made her nearly as tall as he was. With a touch of mascara and lipstick, she looked nothing like the professional he'd gone to lunch with only a couple of days earlier. Nor did she resemble the sun-kissed woman on the paddleboard. As he stood before her, he wasn't sure which version of her he most preferred, though this one, he had to admit, was pretty stunning.
You're right on time, she said, giving him a kiss on the cheek. I'm impressed.
His hands automatically went to her hips. You look beautiful, he murmured. Up close, he caught a whiff of perfume, something floral and understated. Perfect.
Thank you, she said. She patted his chest. I like the shirt.
It's new.
Yeah, for tonight?
You could say that.
I feel special, she said. And I have to say, you clean up pretty well.
Sometimes, he admitted. Are you ready to go?
Just let me grab my purse, and then I'm ready. Where are we going?
The pilot house.
Wow, I love that place. The food is fabulous.
So I've heard. Lily recommended it.
Then she obviously has good taste.
The restaurant wasn't far, but Colin drove at a leisurely speed with the windows rolled down, both of them enjoying the flickering stars that spread to the horizon and a breeze just strong enough to erase the lingering heat of the day. Near the river, Colin left Market Street, eventually pulling into the restaurant's lot. Walking around the car to open Maria's door, he reached for her hand and escorted her to the entrance. Once inside, he was surprised to note that it was less formal than he'd expected. A clean, unpretentious place with white tables and a $1 million view. The restaurant was crowded, people clustering near the bar while they waited for indoor and outdoor tables. After checking in with the hostess, he followed her and Maria to a corner table with a breathtaking view of the Cape Fear River. Moonlight spilled over the slow-moving surface, forming a liquid vein of light between cold, dark banks. As Maria stared toward the water, Colin mentally traced the graceful outlines of her profile, watching her hair catch in the breeze. How had she come to mean so much to him so quickly? As if sensing his thoughts, she met his gaze and smiled slightly before stretching her hands across the table. He took them in his, marveling at their softness and warmth.
It's a gorgeous night, don't you think? She asked.
Gorgeous, he answered. But he knew that he was really referring to her. Sitting across from her, Colin had the strange feeling that he was living someone else's blessed life, someone more deserving than he. And by the end of dinner, after all the dishes had been cleared and the wine glasses emptied and the candles were flickering out, it dawned on him that he'd spent his entire life searching for Maria, and only recently been lucky enough to find her.
Chapter 12. Maria. The warehouse was located in a run-down neighborhood on the outskirts of town, and the only hint that it served a different purpose than any of the other abandoned warehouses nearby was the scores of cars parked haphazardly on the far side of the building, out of sight from the main road. Not that its sketchy vibe seemed to matter. In addition to the crowd already inside, there was a long line of people, almost exclusively male, still waiting to get in. Many were dragging coolers, no doubt filled with alcohol. Others drank beer or sipped from plastic cups as they slowly edged toward the entrance and the music blaring within. Unless they were with a date, girls didn't have to wait in line, and Maria watched as one group after the next cheerfully marched toward the door in tight tops, short skirts, and stiletto heels, ignoring the litter-strewn surroundings, whistles, and catcalls. Colin appeared relaxed, taking it all in quietly. When they reached the door, they were met by a heavy-set man in sunglasses who was collecting the cover charge. The bouncer studied Colin up and down, no doubt trying to decide whether he was with law enforcement. Then did the same to Maria before reluctantly taking the bills Colin was offering and nodding toward the door.
Inside, they encountered a solid mass of swaying bodies, and with the booming music, the place shook with a vibrant, barely contained energy. No one seemed to care about the oil-stained concrete floor or the lack of decor or the industrial-grade lighting. Guys were clustered around their coolers, drinking and shouting to be heard above the music, trying to get the attention of any girl who happened to pass by. Like at most nightclubs, men clearly outnumbered women, and most appeared to be in their 20s or 30s. Maria presumed that the vast majority were working people out for a fun Saturday night. There were, as Serena had noted, some pretty scary-looking guys here, too, with tattoos and bandanas representing various gangs and wearing baggy pants that could easily conceal a weapon. Ordinarily, that would have made her nervous, but the atmosphere indicated that most people were simply focused on having a good time. All the same, she found herself scouting out possible exits in case trouble broke out. Beside her, Colin was also taking in the scene. He leaned toward her ear.
"Would you like to move closer to the music?"
She nodded, and Colin began leading her deeper into the warehouse. They squeezed through the crowd, careful not to bump too hard into anyone, and inched their way to the dance area on the far side of the building, the music pulsing ever louder. Along the way, guys tried to get Maria's attention, demanding her name or commenting on her beauty, or even trying to pinch her butt, but afraid to give Colin any reason for confrontation, she merely scowled at them in silence. The dance floor was separated from the rest of the warehouse by a makeshift barrier of 2x4s nailed together and fastened across metal barrels. Directly opposite them, on pallets stacked against the back wall, was the DJ, his equipment arranged on a fold-out table. It was flanked by 2 speakers the size of refrigerators. The music was loud enough to make Maria's chest thump. On the floor, she watched couples move and spin, triggering in her a surge of memories from a time when life seemed more carefree. Leaning closer to Colin, she could smell the cologne he must have put on earlier.
"Are you sure you're ready for this?"
"Yes," he said, moving past the barrier. Before she knew it, they were surrounded by couples. She was about to tell Colin what to do when he suddenly took her right hand in his left and placed his right hand on her left shoulder blade. And with that, he began to lead her, his steps moving in unison with hers as the music surged around them. Her eyes widened, and when he led her through a perfectly executed spin, followed almost immediately by a second, she was too shocked to say anything at all. Colin merely raised his eyebrows in amusement, making her laugh aloud, and little by little, as one song rolled into the next, she felt herself beginning to let go, losing herself in the music and in him. It was past midnight when they finally left the jammed warehouse and drove back to her condo. Neither of them said much, both feeling warm and slightly flushed as they navigated the quiet streets. Like he had for much of the past few hours, Colin held her hand, his thumb moving against her skin and making it tingle. As they neared her place, she imagined what might happen if she invited Colin upstairs, and was both frightened and excited by her thoughts. They hadn't known each other long enough, and she wasn't sure she was quite ready. Yet she had to admit that she wanted him to come up. She wanted their evening together to continue. She wanted him to kiss her again and take her in his arms. Despite her conflicting emotions, she directed him to the parking area behind her condo. After locking the car, they walked up the steps beside each other, both of them quiet. When they reached the door, she fumbled with her keys, her hands trembling ever so slightly as she unlocked the door. Entering and passing through the living area, she turned on the lamp near the couch. But when she turned around, she realized that Colin had stopped at the threshold. He seemed to sense her confusion, offering her a chance to end the evening now before it went too far. But something had taken hold of her, and tucking a loose strand of hair behind her ear, she smiled.
"Come on in," she said,
her voice sounding hoarse and foreign to her own ears. Colin quietly closed the door behind him as he took in the living area, with its dark pine flooring and crown molding, and the French doors that opened to the small balcony. Though she suspected he probably wouldn't have cared one way or the other, she was suddenly glad she'd spent the morning straightening up, right down to fluffing the decorative pillows on the couch. "You have a beautiful place."
"Thank you."
Moving closer to examine the framed photos above the couch, he asked, "Did you take these?" She nodded.
"Earlier this summer,
He studied them in silence, especially the close-up of the osprey clasping a fish in its talons and surrounded by droplets of water.
"You're very good," he said, visibly impressed.
"You don't know how many bad shots it took to get these, but thank you." Standing close, she could feel the heat still radiating from his body.
"Would you like something to drink? I have a bottle of wine in the fridge."
"Maybe half a glass. I've never been a big wine drinker. And if you have some water, that would be great too."
Leaving him, she went to the kitchen and pulled a couple of wine glasses from the cabinet. In the refrigerator was a bottle she'd opened the night before. She poured two glasses and took a sip before retrieving another glass for his water.
"Would you like ice?"
"Sure, if it's not too much trouble."
"I think I can handle ice."
She handed him the water glass and watched as Colin drained it. Taking the empty glass from him, she set it on the breakfast bar before gesturing toward the French doors.
"Shall we go out on the balcony? I'm in the mood for a little fresh air."
"Sounds good,"
he agreed, reaching for his wine glass. Opening the doors, they stepped onto the balcony. The air was cool against her skin, haze beginning to roll in with the breeze. Traffic was light and the sidewalks stood empty. Street lights cast a yellow glow, and from the bar at the corner, she could hear the faint strains of 80s pop music. He motioned to the rocking chairs off to the side.
"Do you ever sit out here?"
"Not enough, which is kind of sad since the balcony is one of the reasons I bought the condo in the first place. I think I had this idea that I'd unwind out here after work, but it usually doesn't turn out that way. Most nights I'll have a quick dinner and either plant myself at the dining room table or at the desk in the spare bedroom with my MacBook."
She shrugged.
"The whole trying to get ahead thing again, but we've already talked about that, haven't we?"
"We've talked about a lot of things."
"Does that mean you're getting bored with me already?"
He turned toward her, his eyes reflecting the evening light.
"No."
"You know what I find interesting about you?"
Colin waited, saying nothing.
"You don't feel the need to always explain your reasoning when you answer questions. You get straight to the point. The only time you elaborate is when you're asked to do so. You're a man of very few words."
"Okay."
"That's exactly what I mean," she teased. "But all right, you've made me curious. Why don't you elaborate unless you're specifically asked to do so?"
"Because it's easier and it takes less time."
"Don't you think that including others in your thought process helps them understand you better?"
"That assumes they want to understand me better, and if they do, they'll ask me to explain, and then I'll do it."
"And if they don't ask?"
"Then they probably don't care about my reasoning in the first place. They just want to know the answer. I know I do. If I ask someone what time it is, I don't need a history of clockmaking, and I don't care who gave them the watch, or how expensive it was, or whether it was a Christmas present. I just want the time."
"I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about trying to get to know someone, making conversation."
"So am I. But not everyone needs, or even wants, to know why you feel the way you do about something. Some things are better left private."
"Excuse me? Weren't you the one who told me your life story the first night on the beach?"
"You asked questions and I answered them."
"And you think that works?"
"It has for us. We have no trouble talking."
"But that's because I ask a lot of questions."
"Yes."
"Well, it's a good thing I do, or we'd end up like some of those older couples I see in coffee shops who don't say a word to each other while they eat breakfast. Of course, that's probably right up your alley. I can easily imagine you going an entire day without saying anything to anyone."
"Sometimes I do."
"That's not normal."
"Okay."
She took a sip of wine and waved a hand at him.
"More detail, please."
"I don't know what normal really means. I think everyone has his own definition, and it's shaped by culture, by family and friends, by character and experience, by events and a thousand other things. What's normal for one person isn't normal for another. For some people, jumping out of airplanes is crazy. For other people, life isn't worth living without it." She nodded, conceding the point. Still.
"All right. Without me asking a question first, I want you to say how you really feel about something. Something unexpected and completely off topic. Something I wouldn't expect you to say. And then elaborate without me having to ask a single question."
"Why?"
"Humor me," she said, nudging him. "Just for fun."
He rotated the wine glass with his fingers before raising his eyes to hers.
"You're amazing."
You're intelligent and beautiful, and it should be easy for you to meet someone who doesn't have my past, who hasn't made the mistakes I have. Truthfully, it makes me wonder what I'm doing here, or why you even invited me. Part of me thinks that all of this is too good to be true, and that it's going to come crashing down, but even if it does, it wouldn't change the fact that you've already added something to my life. Something that I hadn't even realized was missing. Colin paused. When he spoke again, his voice was quiet. You've come to mean more to me than I think you realize. Before you came along, I had Evan and Lily, and I thought that was enough. But it isn't. Not anymore. Not since last weekend. Being with you makes me feel vulnerable again, and I haven't felt vulnerable since I was a kid. I can't say that I always like it, but the alternative would be worse because it would mean not seeing you again. Maria realized she'd been holding her breath. By the time he finished, she felt almost dizzy, overwhelmed by his response, and tried to steady herself. Colin, on the other hand, continued to exude an easy confidence, and it was that, more than anything, which allowed her to regain her equilibrium.
I'm not sure what to say, she admitted.
You don't have to say anything. I didn't say it because I wanted a response. I said it because I wanted to. She wrapped both hands around the stem of her glass.
May I ask you a question?
She asked shyly.
About something else?
Of course.
Why did you act like you didn't know anything about salsa dancing?
When we talked about it, I didn't. Lily spent the week giving me lessons. That's what I was doing on Thursday and Friday nights.
You learned how to dance for me?
Yes. She turned away and took a sip of wine, trying to mask her amazement.
Thank you. And I guess I should thank Lily, too.
He flashed a quick smile. Would you mind if I refill my water glass? I'm still a bit thirsty.
Of course not.
Colin stepped away and Maria shook her head, wondering when, or even if, she would cease being surprised by him. Luis had never spoken to her like Colin just had. As she leaned over the railing, she suddenly found it hard to remember what she'd really seen in him. On the surface, he was attractive and intelligent, but underneath he'd been arrogant and vain. She'd often made excuses for his behavior, and if anyone questioned her feelings, she'd reacted defensively. Thinking back, she admitted that she desperately wanted his approval, and not only did he sense that, but he frequently took advantage of it. It wasn't a healthy relationship, she knew, and when she tried to imagine him behaving as Colin had, calling her, bringing flowers, learning to dance, she couldn't. And despite all that, she'd loved Luis with an intensity she could still sometimes feel. Earlier, as she and Colin had been dancing, she'd caught herself thinking that the night couldn't possibly get any better. And then, all at once, it had. Listening to him express his feelings without fear or regret had left her speechless. She wondered whether she was capable of such a thing. Probably not, but then again, Colin wasn't like most people. He accepted himself, faults and all, and forgave himself for the mistakes he'd made. More than that, he seemed to live in the moment without regard for either the past or the future. The greatest revelation was how deeply Colin was able to experience his emotions, perhaps even more deeply than she did. Watching him over dinner and on the dance floor and hearing his words just now, she knew that if he wasn't in love with her yet, he was on the brink. Like her, he was willing to surrender to the inevitable, an idea that made her hands tremble. As Colin stepped back onto the balcony behind her, she took a long breath, savoring the wave of desire that flooded through her. He leaned over the railing next to her, and as their breaths fell into steady rhythm, she took another sip of wine, the warmth coursing down her throat into her stomach and limbs. Studying his face in profile, she thought again about the way his external calm enveloped the coiled emotions within him. And she suddenly imagined the way Colin might look as he hovered naked above her, his lips gently brushing hers as they gave themselves over to each other. Her stomach tightened and she felt her mouth curve into a faint smile.
Did you mean what you said to me earlier?
He didn't answer right away. Instead, he lowered his head before turning to face her. I meant every single word. Feeling a cascade of sensations in her body, she moved closer and kissed him gently on the lips. They were soft and warm, and pulling back, she saw in his expression something akin to hope. She kissed him a second time, then felt her skin begin to come alive as he slid his arms around her. He tugged softly, bringing their bodies together, and in that instant, she began to lose herself in him. She could feel the strength of his chest and arms surrounding her and the warm urgency of his tongue, and she knew with fierce certainty that she needed Colin, all of him. They continued to kiss on the balcony beneath a foggy, star-filled sky until she finally reached for his hand. Their fingers intertwined as he kissed the hollow of her neck, the sensation tantalizing and erotic. She shivered, enjoying the sensation before wordlessly leading him to the bedroom. Moments after she woke the next morning, Maria felt the soft glare of the early autumn sun, and the night came rushing back. She rolled over and saw Colin lying on his side, only half covered by the sheet, already awake and alert. "Good morning," he whispered.
"Good morning," she said. "How long have you been up?"
"About an hour."
"Why didn't you go back to sleep?"
"I wasn't tired, and besides, I kind of enjoyed watching you."
"That has the potential to sound very creepy, you know."
"Okay." She smiled.
"Well, since you're watching me, I hope I didn't do anything embarrassing or make any strange noises."
"You didn't. You just lay there looking sexy as hell."
"My hair is messy and I need to brush my teeth."
"Right now?"
"Why? What did you have in mind?"
He reached toward her, using his finger to trace her collarbone, and after that, no words were necessary. Later, they showered together and dressed. Maria dried her hair and put on makeup while Colin leaned against the bathroom counter beside her, nursing a cup of coffee. "Are we going someplace?" he asked.
"Brunch, with my parents."
"Sounds good. I'm going to need to change first, though. What time?"
11.
"I take it that we won't be riding together?"
"That's probably not a good idea. It's going to be hard enough to prepare them for your visit. Because this time, they're going to ask a lot of questions."
"Okay." Maria put down her mascara wand and took his hand.
"Does that bother you or scare you?"
"No."
"Well, it sure scares me," she admitted, returning to her makeup. "The whole thing is terrifying, in fact."
He took a sip of coffee. "What are you going to tell them about me?"
"Hopefully, as little as possible. Any details will just spur more questions that you should answer, not me."
"What are you hoping for today?"
"For my mom to get through it without tears and my father not to demand that you leave the house."
"That's not a very high bar."
"Trust me," she said. "It's higher than you think."
Chapter 13. Colin. Colin pulled up to Maria's parents' house just before 11. He had no idea how the conversation with her parents had gone, and as he stepped out of the car, he figured there was no use in speculating, since he'd find out soon enough anyway. Had Lily been around, he would have asked her what he should bring to a family brunch, but she and Evan were already at church when he got home, and in the end, it probably wouldn't do much good anyway. Like everyone else, they were going to form their own opinions, and a basket of muffins wasn't going to alter them. Still, as he walked to the door, he hoped that Maria was all right. Earlier on his way home, he'd thought about her virtually nonstop, one series of images giving way to the next, each more ravishing than the one before. That was a first for him. She was a first. And he took a deep breath, reminding himself that even though he wouldn't shy away from any questions, his answers could be framed in a lot of different ways and still remain honest. He knocked at the door and it swung open almost immediately, revealing Serena. He noticed again how much she resembled her older sister, though she seemed even more high-strung than usual, which probably wasn't a good sign.
"Hey, Colin,"
she said, stepping aside to let him in.
"I saw you walking up. Come on in."
"Thank you. How did your dinner go last night?"
"Awesome," she answered. "But I should be the one asking you."
"We had a good time."
"I'm sure,"
Serena winked.
"Maria's in the kitchen with Mom," she said, closing the door behind him. "And I'm amazed you were able to get her to go dancing."
"Why?"
"If you don't know yet, I think you need to spend even more time with her," she answered. "But here's a word to the wise. I wouldn't get too descriptive about last night, especially anything that might have happened after the dancing." It's already a little tense around here. I have a hunch that my parents think you're a terrorist.
Okay.
I might be exaggerating, but who really knows? She babbled. I didn't get here until the three of them were finished talking, and my parents barely said hello to me. All I really know for sure is that my dad wasn't smiling, and my mom kept making the sign of the cross, despite how well last night's dinner with the director of the foundation went. Not that my little challenges matter right now. Anyway, I decided it was best if I just waited for you in the living room.
By then they'd reached the kitchen, where he saw Maria standing over a sizzling frying pan while her mom pulled a small baking pan from the oven. The air smelled of bacon and cinnamon.
"Colin's here,"
Serena called out. Maria turned and he noticed she was wearing an apron.
"Hi, Colin," she said tightly. "You remember my mom, right?"
Carmen forced on a plastic smile, and though Colin might have been imagining it, she seemed paler than she'd been just a couple of days earlier. "Good morning, Mrs. Sanchez," he said, figuring a bit of formality was probably a good bet.
"Good morning,"
she nodded, and obviously uncomfortable, turned her attention back to the pan as she placed it on an iron rack on the counter. Serena leaned toward him.
"My mom decided to do an American breakfast just for you," she whispered. "Bacon and eggs, French toast, cinnamon rolls. Of course, that was before Maria told her about you."
Maria pulled a couple of strips of bacon from the pan and set them on a napkin-covered plate off to the side of the stove.
"Hey, Serena, can you take over for a second?" "Be glad to," Serena chirped. "But only if I get to wear the cool apron."
Maria started toward them, slipping off the apron as she walked and passing it to Serena like trading places was normal. In this kitchen, Colin assumed it was. Serena started chatting away with her mother in Spanish as she donned the apron. Up close, Colin noticed tension in the way Maria was moving. She gave him a quick peck on the cheek, careful to keep a bit of distance between them.
"Any trouble finding the place?"
"Google," he answered. Glancing over his shoulder, it was hard not to notice the way Carmen frowned slightly. He knew enough not to ask how it had gone earlier. Instead, he defaulted to silence. Maria lowered her voice, concern etched on her face.
"Would you mind talking to my dad before we eat?"
"Okay."
"And,
she trailed off. "It's your father," he said. "I won't forget." She nodded, the movement almost imperceptible.
"I'm going to stay in here and help my mom in the kitchen," she said. "My dad's at the table on the back porch. Do you want any coffee?"
"I'm fine," Colin replied.
"Water?"
"I'm fine," he said again.
"Okay."
She took a step backward.
"I guess I better get back to the kitchen then."
Colin watched as she backed away, past a refrigerator decorated with dozens of photos, letters, and other keepsakes, before she turned around. He moved toward the slider, and as soon as he opened the door, Felix turned his way. There was less anger than he'd anticipated, though the shock and disappointment were evident, as was his obvious antagonism. In his lap, a small white dog was sleeping. Colin closed the door behind him and walked toward Felix, his eyes steady. Nearing the table, he offered his hand.
"Good morning, Mr. Sanchez. Maria said you wanted to speak with me."
Felix looked toward the hand before he reluctantly offered his own. Colin stood, waiting for Felix to invite him to sit at the table. Eventually, Felix nodded toward a chair, and Colin sat. He clasped his hands and rested them in front of him, remaining quiet. There was no point in trying to make small talk or pretending that he didn't know what Felix wanted to discuss. Felix was in no rush to speak and took his time scrutinizing him.
"Maria said that you were in trouble with the law," he finally began. "Is that true?"
"Yes," Colin answered. Over the next half hour, the full story came out in bits and pieces, much as it had with Maria that first night on the beach. He didn't sugarcoat his past or attempt to mislead Felix. He was who he was. Like with Maria, Felix's shock was pronounced at times, and he pressed for further clarification. When Colin eventually recounted what happened at the first military school he'd attended, Colin thought he saw a flash of sudden understanding. By the time he finished, Felix was less on edge than he had been when Colin had first joined him on the porch, but it was also clear that he needed time to think about all that he'd learned. No surprise there. Felix was a father, and Maria was his daughter, and there was only so far he would go.
"You claim that you've changed, and I would like to believe you, but I'm not sure that I do."
"Okay," Colin nodded.
"What if you get arrested again?" I don't plan on it.
That's the problem. People seldom plan on it.
Colin said nothing. There was really nothing to say.
Felix continued to pet the little white dog. If you do get arrested, what will happen?
I won't see her. I'll end it. The worst thing would be for her to think she should wait. After a moment, Felix offered a slight nod, satisfied but still unsure as to whether he believed it.
If you ever hurt my daughter or put my daughter in danger...
He didn't finish, but he didn't need to. Colin knew what Felix wanted to hear, and because it was true, he had no trouble saying it.
It won't happen. I have your word?
Yes. Just then, Maria popped her head out, clearly nervous but also relieved that she hadn't heard any shouting.
Are you two about finished? Brunch is ready?
Felix exhaled.
We're done, he said. Let's eat.
After they'd finished eating, Serena and her parents began to clean up while Maria lingered behind with Colin.
What did you say to him? Maria asked.
The truth, Colin answered.
All of it?
Yes.
Maria appeared flummoxed.
Then it went a lot better than I thought it would.
Maria was right. The brunch had been relatively pleasant, with Serena chattering on about the scholarship, Steve, and the escapades of her numerous friends. Felix and Carmen had occasionally asked questions, even lobbing a few queries toward Colin, though all were about work or school. When he'd mentioned MMA, he thought that Carmen had paled just a bit.
Still, Maria said, I guess you were right. It was best to get it all out there in the beginning.
Sometimes, Colin thought. Not always. Felix had been cordial, but there wasn't any fondness or trust evident, both of which would take time to achieve, if that was possible at all. He didn't say that, though. Instead, he reached for the door.
Do you want to do some paddleboarding later?
He asked.
How about we do something different instead, like jet skiing? We could rent them at the beach. Does that sound fun?
He recalled the sight of her in a bikini again.
Actually, that sounds great.
They met at Wrightsville Beach later that afternoon and spent a couple of hours on jet skis before Colin returned home to squeeze in a quick workout. They cooked dinner at Maria's and then, like the night before, spent the next few hours wrapped in each other's arms. Monday morning came too soon, but that week they spent as much time together as they could. Colin met Maria for lunch twice, and on Wednesday she spent the evening at Krabby Pete's, nursing a Diet Pepsi and working on a legal brief for Barney, with her MacBook propped on the bar in front of her. Aside from his shifts and classes, a few hours for working out, and family brunch, they were together almost every minute, and went to both the farmer's market and the aquarium, neither of which Colin had ever contemplated visiting before. Through it all, he simply tried to embrace the way he felt about her. He didn't think about it, didn't worry about it, didn't try to understand it. Instead, he enjoyed the way he felt whenever she laughed, and how sexy she was when she knit her eyebrows in concentration. He savored the feel of her hand in his as they walked and talked, their conversations drifting from the serious to the silly. On Sunday night, in bed, after making love, Maria was lying on her stomach, her knees bent and feet up as she nibbled on some grapes. Colin found it impossible to take his eyes from her, ogling her until she playfully tossed a grape at him.
Stop staring. You're making me feel self-conscious.
He reached for the grape and popped it in his mouth.
Why?
Because I'm Catholic and we're not married, maybe?
He chuckled.
Your mother asked if I was Catholic, didn't she?
When we were at lunch the first time.
You understand Spanish?
Not really. I took it in high school and barely passed, but I heard my name and the word Católico when she was at the table. It wasn't that hard to translate, but yes, he continued. I was raised Catholic. I was baptized and confirmed the whole nine yards, but I pretty much stopped going to church after I got sent off to school, so I'm not sure what that makes me now.
She'll still be happy.
Good.
How did they get you confirmed if you stopped going to church?
Donations, I guess. Probably a big one, because the priest let me do a cram course one summer, and even though I didn't do any of the work, the next year they let me get confirmed anyway.
That's kind of cheating.
It's not kind of cheating, it is cheating. On the plus side, I got a go-kart out of it, so that was kind of nice.
A go-kart?
It was either that or I wouldn't do it, for all the good it did me.
I totaled it within a couple of weeks and refused to talk to my parents the rest of the summer because they wouldn't buy me a new one.
Nice, she said sarcastically.
I've never hidden the fact that I have issues.
I'm aware, she smiled. But sometimes I wish you'd surprise me in a good way when you talk about your younger years.
He thought about it. I beat up my older sister's ex-boyfriend once.
Does that count, since he was a total jerk? No, she said. That doesn't count.
He smiled. Do you want to have lunch tomorrow?
I'd love to, but I already promised Jill. She texted me earlier and I forgot to mention it. I'm open to a late dinner, though.
I can't, he said. I have to work.
You mean we might not see each other tomorrow? Whatever am I going to do?
It might have been the playfulness in her tone or the fact that a long and wonderful weekend was finally coming to an end, but he didn't respond. Instead, he just stared at her, noting the sensual curves of her body, perfect in nearly every way. You are incredibly beautiful, he whispered. A light smile played across her lips, seductive and lovely.
Yeah?
Yeah, he echoed. And as he continued to gaze at her, he couldn't shake the feeling that a long journey was finally coming to an end. He knew what that meant. And while the feeling had been unimaginable even a month ago, there was no reason to deny it. He reached toward her, gently running his fingers through her hair, the sensation luxurious, and he let out a long breath. I love you, Maria, he finally murmured. He watched as her surprise gave way to comprehension. With his hand still in her hair, she wrapped it in hers.
Oh, Colin, she whispered. I love you too.
Chapter 14. Maria. They made love early the following morning. Afterward, Colin told her he wanted to get a workout in before class, and though the sun had not yet risen when he left, Maria tossed and turned, unable to fall back to sleep. She finally got out of bed, resolved to catch up on some long-neglected work. She brewed coffee, showered, and dressed, and with the best of intentions, opened up her MacBook to get some work done in the hour and a half before she left for the office. And yet, as she settled in, she couldn't escape a growing, though inchoate, sense that something was wrong. Even as she sifted through her feelings, she couldn't pinpoint the cause. The timing made her suspect that it had something to do with Colin. The relationship had been a bit of a whirlwind, although she certainly didn't regret it. They'd fallen in love, and there was nothing wrong with that. It was normal. It happened to other people every day, and considering all the time they'd spent getting to know each other, it wasn't even all that unexpected. So what on earth was bothering her? Refilling her cup, she abandoned the table and wandered to the balcony, watching as the port city slowly came to life. A light mist lingered just above the sidewalk, making it appear almost out of focus. As she sipped her coffee, she remembered standing in the same spot the night they had first made love, and though it brought a smile to her face, the memory was accompanied by a definite pang of anxiety. Okay, so maybe her feelings about Colin weren't as simple and straightforward as she wanted to pretend. But what exactly was throwing her off? That they were sleeping together? The words they'd spoken to each other last night? The fact that her parents didn't approve of him? Or that a month ago she couldn't have even imagined falling for someone like him? That pretty much sums it up, she admitted. But why this anxiety this morning? It was ridiculous to think that simply saying, I love you, could upset her equilibrium this way. Logically, it made no sense. She finished her coffee and decided to head into work early, sure that she was blowing the whole thing out of proportion. And yet, throughout the morning, the feeling didn't dissipate. If anything, it only grew more pronounced. By 10, even her stomach had grown slightly upset. The more she tried to convince herself that worrying about Colin didn't make sense, the more difficult she found it to concentrate. As the clock clicked toward the lunch hour, all she could think was that she needed to talk to Jill. Maria went through all of it, including the way she was feeling as she watched Jill pull several pieces of sushi from the platter onto her plate and begin wolfing them down. For her part, Maria put a single piece on her plate before realizing there wasn't a chance she could force it down. By the time she finished speaking, Jill was nodding.
So let me get this straight, Jill said. You met a guy. The two of you slept together after not dating all that long, You introduced him to your parents, and they didn't run for the hills. And he told you that he loved you. And then, this morning, you suddenly began questioning everything. Have I summed that up correctly?
Pretty much.
And you're not sure why?
Maria made a face.
Humor me. It's simple. You're just going through a grown-up version of the walk of shame.
Excuse me?
The walk of shame? From college. After you had too much to drink at a party, and you hooked up with a guy that you thought was perfect, and then, when morning came around, you couldn't believe what had just happened, and then walked back across the campus to your place wondering what the hell you were doing, still dressed in what you'd been wearing the night before.
I know what the walk of shame is, and it's not anything like that.
Jill used her chopsticks to pick up the last remaining maki roll.
Maybe not specifically, but I'd be surprised if your emotions weren't seesawing from one extreme to the other, which is what most girls go through during the walk of shame. As in, did that really happen? Was it as good as I remember? What did I do? Falling in love is terrifying. That's why they say falling in love, and not something like floating toward love. Falling is scary. Floating is kind of dreamy.
She shook her head sorrowfully at Maria's plate.
I just ate all of our food, and I'm going to blame you when I get on the scale.
In other words, you think that what I'm going through is normal?
I'd be way more worried if you weren't questioning everything. Because then, it would mean you're crazy.
Did this happen with Paul when you first fell in love with him?
Of course. One day he'd be all I could think about, and the next, I'd wonder whether I was making the biggest mistake of my life. And here's a little secret. Sometimes, it still happens. I know I love him, but I'm not sure I love him enough to date him forever. I want to get married and have children, or at least one. And by the way, his parents don't like me that much, and I struggle with that, too.
Why don't they like you?
They think I talk too much and that I'm too opinionated.
You're kidding.
I know, right?
Maria laughed before growing serious again.
I think it's hard because everything about Colin and me just seems so foreign. With Luis, it all made sense. We were friends first, and even after we were dating, it must have been 6 months before I told him that I loved him. My parents liked him, and he came from a good family, and there was nothing about his past to even question. If memory serves, I believe you also told me that Serena didn't like Luis at all. And in the end, he turned out to be a selfish jerk.
Oh yeah, that.
But Luis was your first love. You can't compare what happened then with what's happening now.
That's what I just said.
You're missing my point.
My point is that first loves always make sense because you don't know any better. Everything is a first, and any warning bells are drowned out by the sheer novelty of it all. In the beginning, anyway. Now you're older and wiser, and you need someone in your life who's older and wiser, too. You want someone who doesn't play games, and with Colin, what you see is what you get. You trust him and you enjoy spending time with him. Or, at least, that's what you've been telling me.
And you don't think it's moving too fast?
Compared to what? It's your life.